Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, almost 400 bodies have been dug up from mass graves in Gaza, some showing evidence of torture.
The smell of death is just overwhelming your brain and your ability to think or act.
The heartbreaking details from the scene as outrage continues to pour in from around the world. I'm Kevin Hurton, and this is The Take. Over the past week, Gaza emergency officials uncovered hundreds of bodies buried in mass graves at two leading hospitals, saying some were executed by the Israeli military.
In these mass graves, the bodies of martyrs were stacked together, and there were indications that field executions or summary executions were conducted, as well as...
This has led to an international outcry.
The European Union and the United Nations have joined international calls for an independent probe into the situation.
Even from Israel's closest allies.
The White House has described the reports of mass graves in Gaza as deeply disturbing.
But in Gaza, what happened seems clear.
Some of the victims had their hands tied and they were buried alive. And others, according to eyewitness accounts, were crushed with tanks in what appears to be an attempt to cover up evidence.
And today, we're talking to a journalist who is in Gaza.
I am Akram Al-Satari. I work as a freelance journalist. I'm originally from Khan Yunis. I was displaced, and I am in Rafah now.
And it was at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, his hometown, where he witnessed firsthand these bodies excavated body by body from one of the mass graves. Okay, Akram, why don't we start from the beginning? We're talking about two separate mass graves at two separate hospitals in Gaza. So who found these graves and what exactly did they find there?
Well, as a matter of fact, the two huge mass graves were found in Al-Shifa and Nasser Medical Complex.
You'll notice you can hear the sounds of Gaza as Akram tells us this story. Israeli drones buzzing, and the people who have fled to Rafah trying to just live their lives. He told us it was family members of the dead who first found their loved ones' bodies. That's where it started.
Apparently, they're found initially by some family members of the ones who were deceased or the ones who were killed and buried. And then the civil defense joined forces and was digging out the bodies, and then Ministry of Health also stepped in, and they were trying to identify the bodies. So they were trying to assess if there was a summary execution happening in that particular area. And they were also trying to help the families who lost their deceased identify them and bury them.
So Akram, some of the details here are really horrific.
The most agonizing moment is when the Israeli soldiers shot dead civilian men before our own eyes. Some were shot dead, others were buried alive in ditches. Most of the dead bodies were bulldozed and buried by the Israelis. I saw many young men handcuffed and blindfolded, thrown in a ditch and buried with sand.
At least 10 of the bodies were found with bound hands. Some people had medical devices and tubes still attached to them, which some are interpreting to mean that they were buried alive. What is the working theory here as to what happened to these people?
The general assumption is that the Israeli armored vehicles, tanks, and also unmanned drones, and the guided missiles or the guided projectiles that were used were having an ultimate object or goal, which is the destruction of everything that would stand in the face of the Israeli troops. The area that was targeted is a hospital, which means an extra caution should have been taken just in case they were fighting against whoever they think their enemy. But from the way the things were seen, including people with the tied arms behind their back and also people with the medical accessories, and this particular case happened in Al-Shifa. Al-Shifa used to shelter around 30,000 people.
There was more than one Israeli siege on Al-Shifa Hospital. And in March, the Israeli military destroyed the hospital.
All the hospital's departments were destroyed, including laboratories, radiology units.
Buildings were burned and the courtyard was bulldozed. When they withdrew, they left behind a trail of bodies across the compound.
And then some people who were still there were evacuated.
Many patients died because they were deprived of medical care. Now the vulnerable are being taken elsewhere.
And some people who were less fortunate stayed in that particular area, and they were the prime target of the operation. So it looks like the Israeli army was killing every single person they could kill. They were killing whoever they can.
So the working theory is that these people were killed by Israeli soldiers. Now, I know that this is a hospital, and there have been some reports that there are bodies buried there going back a long way, but it's pretty clear that these were recently killed people.
Yeah. In some of the cases, because I was there, I saw, like, I wouldn't say most of the bodies, but I saw a great deal of bodies. Some of people were fully decomposed. Some bodies looked fresh, but the smell and the state of the body, the bodies when they were retrieved, were indicative that there was some stage when some people were killed and buried, and there was some stage when people were killed before, and they were put into, stockpiled into that hole. And when you are there, you would realize that this hole comes in two or three layers. The Israeli army, or whoever buried them, was just putting one layer of people, then burying them, and then a second layer of people, then burying them, and then a third layer of people, then burying them. So the process was gradual, and there was a time interval between the three different burials, and that could be seen through the status and the conditions of the bodies that were retrieved.
You mentioned that you were there while some of these excavations were taking place. I imagine this is the kind of thing that will stick with you for a very long time.
Yeah, indeed. I cried in the last 7 days, because I was going there almost every day. I cried in those days more than I cried my whole life. The day before the last, I saw a mother who was trying to find her son, and then when the bulldozer was just carrying one of the bodies, then she was saying, "Please stop, this is my son," even without knowing or seeing anything. And then it turned out that it was her son. Her daughter was also mourning her brother, and they were crying, and they even wanted to hold the body. You know, when you are in there to help you through the situation, the first thing that you encounter is the smell of the decomposed human flesh, something that makes you want to vomit, something that makes you dizzy, and then you resist that urge so that you report the account of the suffering of the people who are there. And then when you see the bodies and how they are decomposed, and then when you see the families and how sometimes they are happy because they found the dead bodies of their sons or daughters or wives or husbands. So many conflicting feelings, many draining emotions. You see people screaming, you see them rejoicing. Even next to the morgue, there is a flower tree full of flowers, red and yellow ones. And then you find the mothers and the fathers and the daughters and the sons going to that tree, picking the flowers and putting them into the shrouds of their dear ones. So the smell of the death, also the acts of loyalty, the acts of sincerity that you see the people are doing, and you see that they are not deterred even by the smell of the bodies. The mother that I'm telling you about was also insisting that she should hold the body of her son.
My goodness.
So you can imagine how is it like when the smell and everything, and then a mother that is still insisting to hold the body of her son.
Gosh. So, Akram, among the many horrors here, one thing that being buried in a mass grave does is it anonymizes people, right? They become statistics or part of a group or part of an act of violence, and it strips them of their individual humanity. So with that in mind, I wonder if you can share any personal stories about some of the people found in these graves?
I will tell you another story of a woman who was just trying to find the body of her 18-year-old daughter. And the mother was just trying to find the body. And when she found the body, she was talking to the body. She was telling her, "You were the best amongst my children. You promised me to honor me by scoring high scores in Tawjihi or in the high school. You promised me to honor me, and then you honored me by your death as a martyr." One of the things that I also could not take in, and it made me cry. The personal aspect of this in such an environment that death is just prevailing, and then you see those people who awaken you by how sincere they are to the ones that they lost, and those very personal stories remind you of the fact, like you have rightly said, that it's not about the statistics, it's about the quality of life that has been wasted by an ongoing bombardment and killing in the Gaza Strip. It's about the last bidding farewell.
Akram says these mass graves are the latest trauma after more than 6 months of trauma that has affected everyone in Gaza, even him. After burying someone he thought was a friend's relative and posting a video about it, he was told by a stranger it was not the relative at all.
He told them, "I saw the video. This is not your family member. This is someone else. Your family member is still in Nasser Hospital."
Walking down the street, Akram says, people will bury the bodies of strangers they find lying on the road.
This is a recurrent situation in Gaza. People are burying people they don't know. One guy also told me he saw one guy that was killed and the body is decomposed. Then he digged a grave in the street and wrote the details. This guy is wearing jeans and then a blue shirt, and that's it. There is no way to identify. Even the medical staff are struggling to find people. So this is how surreal and weird the situation that we're living in.
More on this story after the break.
Get your news in less than 3 minutes, three times per day with the Al Jazeera News Updates. Just ask your home device to play the news by Al Jazeera or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, Akram, this is extremely serious stuff. I mean, we start talking about mass graves and it starts to conjure up some of the worst events in recent history. I mean, we're talking killing fields in Cambodia, Rwanda.
The killing fields of Cambodia, where it's estimated that 1 million people died.
Villagers have been exhuming the bones of victims of the 1994 genocide, when Hutu militias massacred Tutsis and those who defended them.
Are the authorities in Gaza equipped for doing these excavations themselves? I mean, what resources are they asking for?
They have minimum resources. They have minimum resources. They don't have forensic labs. They don't have proper medical equipment to do the excavation of the people. I think two bulldozers that were working for around 9 days trying to excavate the people. You know, this particular type of work needs forensic teams to be carefully moving, taking samples, doing things, but that was not the case for Gaza. And that is due to the fact that this extremely difficult situation has rendered Gazans with no resources whatsoever to try to identify, to try to help, and even to try to save. Now, we have people who are under the rubble of their houses for 2, 3, 4 months.
Yeah.
No one could save them because they are not resourced enough. And even the resources that they have were targeted by the Israeli occupation. Some of them were burned when they were targeted by quadcopters with some incendiary materials. And some of them were targeted by unmanned drones with missiles, grenades, and things like that.
So what is the response so far from the Israelis?
Israelis are not responding to anything. Israelis are not allowing heavy machines in. And even when I was there in Khan Yunis, the bombardment, the strikes were still continuous. So Palestinians faced the challenge of digging out the bodies of their dears while they understand that they might end up being targeted and may be being dead, like just like their dears, the ones that they're trying to retrieve. You
So we heard this comment from U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel.
We have seen those reports, and the reports are incredibly troubling, and we're inquiring on this with the government of Israel.
What's the U.S. saying?
The U.S. is always expressing concern, and they don't forget to express the undying support for Israel to defend itself, and they are also providing them with arms.
The U.S. Senate has approved a $95 billion aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, around $61 billion in long-awaited aid for Ukraine. It designates more than $26 billion in aid for Israel and $8 billion for Taiwan and U.S. Indo-Pacific allies.
To continue the mission of defending the state of Israel and the citizens of Israel at the expense of the Palestinian people, at the expense of the life of the children, the women, the elderly people, and at the expense of the destruction of whole Gaza Strip, because now we have around 75% of the built area in Gaza destroyed. So you can imagine how is it like.
Okay. How is the news of these mass graves playing in Gaza?
People are shocked. People are disheartened. People are also aware that this might continue now. Given the news about the looming ground operation in Rafah, they're also worried that something similar will be happening to them and will be happening in different areas, such as European Gaza Hospital and Abu Yusuf al-Najjar Hospital.
So the discovery of these mass graves is not happening in a vacuum. It comes in the wake of the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, ruling that what's happening in Gaza is a plausible genocide.
The court is also of the view that Israel must take measures within its power to prevent and punish the direct and public incitement to commit genocide in relation to the members of the Palestinian group in the Gaza Strip.
The court ordered Israel to, quote, refrain from any acts that could fall under the Genocide Convention and ensure that its troops commit no genocidal acts against Palestinians in Gaza.
Israel has been treating the Palestinians recklessly, either dead or alive, and that also the facts that have been seen show and support that ruling of the ICJ that Israel has been committing things that might amount to genocidal behavior or that war crimes against the humanity and all of those things that happen is something quite shocking. And finding some of those people with their hands tied is also indicative of something even more shocking than just desecrating the bodies. I think everything that is done now and everything that is exposed is not in the favor of the occupation that has been seizing the support that was initially given to them to continue devastating Gaza, not fighting against a specific group in Gaza, but rather fighting against Gaza as whole and destroying Gaza as whole and targeting the population as whole, depriving them from almost everything, from the water, from the food, from the sanitation, and from everything that a human needs. So they were treated as subhumans, and I think everything that is found now is not supporting the Israeli advocacy worldwide and is going also to complicate things for them and make it even more difficult for them to justify their actions.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Khalid Sultan and Chloe K. Lee with Zainab Badr, Sonia Bagat, Varanisa Kampana, David Enders, Manahil Navid, Sari El-Khalili, Tamara Kendocker, Ashish Malhotra, Catherine Nguyen, Nagin Oliayi, Amy Walters, and me, Kevin Hurton, in for Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan, Alexander Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Ney Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back.